Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Hello again and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean. I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing good today.
Man, Greg, it has been a while. We've kind of been on a hiatus here for about a month, I think.
Yeah.
Just, you know, scheduling and busy during the holidays. It's been a little rough, but we are so very excited to get back on board here, talk to you guys about some things that have popped up in the Magic world recently. But we also wanted to remind you all that this show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where any order you make, whether it's singles or sealed product, boxes of M19 perhaps, any order you make over $10, use a promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to save yourself 10% off your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. Greg, we are on episode 60. Holy cow. Man.
Are you sure?
Kind of crept up on us. Yeah.
It really has. You're right.
Episode 50 feels like it was just yesterday, but here we are. So, you know what? Let's hit the ground running. But, Greg, why don't you give us a little bit of details on the story for M19 and how we're going to handle that.
So, as you guys have probably been reading, and we talked briefly about it last time, this story, it's good. I'm excited for it, but it feels so convoluted. Like, they're really, really trying to stretch this out over 8 episodes. So, in the favor of having a better story about this, we're going to come to you once the story ends, and we're going to give you a lore corner that is bigger than normal because we want to talk about the story a little bit more and throw in some of our own thoughts and ideas, of course. Since we're dealing with Nicol Bolas, we're dealing with Ugin, we're dealing with all the Elder Dragons and Yasova Dragonclaw. I can only imagine we're going to meet Sarkhan as well. But it's just, at the time right now, it doesn't feel like we would be doing you a good service in talking about the story straight out each episode, because mostly we'd only give you a sentence or two.
Yeah, and you know, we get excited about the story, and then we want to talk to you guys about it. And to be honest, it is a little convoluted. It's a little bit of time warping, jumping back and forth. So it is a little confusing, and if we can just kind of piece it together at the end, give it to you in digestible chunks, then we feel like you guys would probably get more out of it. Of course, if you're reading it as you go along, that's fantastic. We're trying to keep up too, and it is an interesting story, but in terms of letting you guys know via this podcast, we're going to try that this time and see how that goes. Also because we do have quite a bit that we want to talk about. We're a little late to the party, but there's been an announcement recently. There's a Hearthstone tournament coming up that some Magic the Gathering players got invited to. Or wait, no, I'm sorry. I got that mixed up.
Wait, where are we even at when we're talking about this?
This, what do you mean?
I mean, this is news and announcements, but we didn't even introduce it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. We're kind of going all out of order here. But before we really dive into it, sure, let's go ahead and head into As Foretold.
Hey, there we go.
Oh,
now,
man,
we get
to
cast
so
spells. I know.
Back in the saddle again, so to speak. Okay.
Some people say riding a bike's easy.
Yeah, right? The Silver Showcase, like I said, we're a couple weeks late, but no shortage of opinions here on talking about it. Now, we're not, you know, magic pros, but after hearing the reaction of a lot of people, whether it was on Twitter, whether it was on YouTube, whether it was on other podcasts, there's some mixed emotions regarding this. So, shot out of a cannon, Greg, what you know so far, how do you feel about the Silver Showcase? Is it overall good thing or is it an overall bad thing?
Well, after the events at Vegas, I have issues with it because, sure, I love old Magic. Old Magic is great.
It's awesome.
When you're using it with new stuff, but old Magic straight out is clunky, hard to play, and hard to follow. And the fact that the Silver Showcase is going to be utilizing old Magic to advertise new Magic gives me a feel bad. Now, if there's a possibility of the fact that we're going to get into old Magic in new Magic, like we get Arena with Masters Series or something, nah, you know, maybe I can deal with that. But for the common, you know, Tom, Dick, and Jane, it's going to be a little bit of a problem having them watch this after playing Hearthstone because it's just a completely different change.
Right, right. Now,
and it's a problem to do that.
Yeah, and let me start off by saying, and this opinion may be a little controversial, in terms of what Magic is trying to do, I think they invited the right people. I think by basing it on the top pro point earners across the globe from various countries, plus inviting some of the biggest and most prominent names in a competing collectible e-card game. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. This is Hearthstone here, which is Magic's main competition in the esports world. Mm-hmm. By inviting, you know, Kibler, Sivka, and Amaz, I think that they are really trying to pull from the correct audience, and they did invite the right people. Kudos to Wizards for that. Just because, you know, they'll be able to get their followers out to watch. Hopefully, if Magic is in fact going to become an e-sport, which is a whole nother can of worms that we don't need to get into right now, but if that is your MO, then yes, you have done the right thing. Congratulations. Unfortunately, that's kind of where it stops in terms of the praise. Everything else about this seems just totally wrong to me. Let's go ahead and start out with what they will be drafting. They'll be drafting, I believe.
Wait, don't forget the type of draft.
Oh, that's right. It's a Rodchester draft. Now, Rodchester drafting involves opening one pack at a time and rotating it around as you draft one individual card. It takes a long time, but you do get to see a good focus on each card, each pick from each pack. But it definitely seems like in any other format, a Rodchester draft would be sort of painful. I don't know, Greg, do you think that a Rodchester draft is the right way to do this or not?
Being it's the old sets, diehard Magic fans are really happy it's going to be a Rodchester draft because giving them a Rodchester draft with these sets allows us to see everybody's cards they want to get. And it's definitely a more intuitive play style because you have to pay attention to the fact of what everybody else is drafting so you can decide on your draft picks as well. But
right,
if you're trying to introduce this to a new group of players, which I can only imagine that's what they're really trying to do, this makes bad sense.
Yep. Yep. I mean, this is beta. The, you know, second...
Whoa. It's not just beta.
Oh, no, it's not. Why don't you tell us which sets that they will be drawing from?
So there's going to be beta. There's going to be Arabian Night. There's going to be Antiquities and Legends. So that's right. They're... three packs each of limited edition beta, a pack Arabian Nights, a pack Antiquities, and a pack of Legends.
Okay. So
going to be what?
Six packs.
And then what
right?
else? Yeah.
Okay. Well, based on that and knowing that, you know, you are trying to attract some new players to this game, this potential esport, why not throw the best of the best out there to get everyone jazzed about it? Why not have somebody draft a contract from below? right?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm sorry, sir. You can't play with that card. It is banned in all formats.
Why not?
Because it antis.
Wait, what's anti? I'm a Hearthstone player. What the heck is anti?
Well, anti is a way to play the game where anytime you play and you lose, the cards that you've antied go to your opponent.
So it's like gambling.
Good thing we're not in Vegas.
Yeah, right. Okay, so there's that whole issue. What if people open up cards that say anti on them? You're going to live on stream say, oh, by the way, you can't use this card. Because it's from a vestigial aspect of Magic that died off within the first year of its existence.
If they're Rochestering draft with six packs each, that's a lot of packs.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think they're planning ahead in the fact that they know there's going to be anti-cards. They know it's going to happen. And they're just making sure that when it does happen, they have something to take care of it. Now, I'm willing to bet you what's going to end up happening with this Rochester draft is anytime we're going to pull out these cards, the anti-cards are just going to get pulled out.
Well, then that also kind of brings to question, I didn't actually see the stream the first time around.
I didn't either.
I was going to say, if they cracked the box in front of them and passed out the packs, then that's fantastic. That's truly random, and you never know what you're going to get. But if I'm not mistaken, in the older packs, wasn't the packaging such that you can kind of move the cards around and see what was in them before you opened them?
The other issue is the fact that Alpha and Beta, those packs were actually see-through.
Yeah.
And the boxes were never factory packed.
So they could potentially just be seeding these packs to make sure that, you know, none of these, that's a lot of work to go through and push each individual card up to look. But anyway, I mean, also, what if someone opens up a Scheherazade? Did you watch that the Loading Ready Run broadcast when Wedge was playing Unhinged and pulled the Scheherazade, and what a fiasco that was? And like that thing quickly just turned upside down, and there's a potential that someone might open one of those. So in this, you know, spectacle of a situation, you might have someone casting a Scheherazade and playing a sub game within a sub game of Magic, and meanwhile you're trying to attract Hearthstone players. You know, forget it. Let's not showcase a flip bolus planeswalker that's got everyone just jumping out of their chairs cheering. No.
What about if they open a Chaos Orb?
Okay, yeah.
There are so many old mechanics here that are just unplayable now. Banding?
Well, I think it's very... Okay, you know what? You know what? My opinion on that, I love the fact that there were people playing with banding because it forced the issue, and when judges have to explain that, guess what? Instead of people all over saying, well, banding's impossible, we're never going to explain it, you know? Sure, there's corner case scenarios that are super complicated, but the actual mechanic itself was pretty powerful. It was pretty fun to use,
too. Well,
yeah,
it gave attackers the benefit.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, we're all attacking as one, and we're going to decide how the damage goes through. Okay, yes. Yeah, there's many layers that go on top of that, but this is a dead mechanic that you're never going to see again, but now you're going to get to see them play with it, which is awesome.
Yeah, but we're kind of beating the horse dead here. This is all going to prove problematic trying to pull in the new group. I feel that there was a better choice in playing something. Heck, if they even did Modern Masters original, that would have been a great thing to watch.
Sure, right. But I mean,
or even if they did a proxy Masters set that's never been released.
Yeah.
Could you imagine Masters from Modo? Masters
that
Edition
would be cool.
4? That would have been sweet.
Again.
But we know we're never going to get that.
Again, that would have been done digitally, which is what we're going for. You're trying to attract a digital audience with ancient paper cards that people will never be able to get. I mean, this is everything about this just seems so wrong. I mean, if you're going for the celebrity aspect to reach out and get these people to play, go talk to Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Go talk to Seth Rogen. Go talk to celebrity actors who play Magic. Get them involved. Next thing you know, your audience is through the roof.
Do you think Vin Diesel plays?
Sure. Okay, great. Great. But there's just so much of this that's gray area that it seems like they're trying to appease everybody. You know, everyone's included. But you're only going to piss more people off by trying to say, like, oh, well, we're going to make everybody happy. You know, this
well,
should be.
Well, Ma, you got to remember here. We're talking, yeah, it's a 25th anniversary. How much money does Magic have? Can they really invest in getting players that play and are movie stars? Probably not. Is this the best that they could do? Yeah, you know, but they didn't want to make it so it was pro players only because there's so much salt that came out of Vegas.
Okay, here's an idea. The prize pool, this event was advertised as a $150,000 event. How much are you going to need to pay people to come and play Magic? Seriously. If you were like, hey, Mr. Celebrity, you put George Costanza. Yeah, he used to play Magic. Why don't you come and play Magic? We'll pay you $20,000, right? Times what, eight? That's 106. That's $10,000 more. And even if they just wanted to come to play for fun, I mean, it's crazy. They're pulling every different direction with this. And I mean, in theory, it's awesome because they're opening old packs. But in the reality of what they're actually trying to do with this event, it seems insane.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get it, you know? Like, you got all these pros who are complaining because they want to play Magic professionally and basically earn a livable wage off of playing Magic, or at least make more so they might not have to produce as much content as they do now. I mean, I've heard many pro players saying that, you know, it is impossible to live off of your Magic winnings alone. Okay, yeah, sure, great. Meanwhile, Fortnite is paying out $100 million in prize money. You know, this year right here.
Yeah, yeah, but there's also the whole thing of you got to look at with Fortnite is they have what, 100 programmers that are working on it.
Oh yeah. Oh,
okay.
Absolutely.
So then, how much are they making a month in microtransactions?
Oh, they're making boatloads,
and there's no physical product being made there. So all they're actually doing is server space and programming.
Yeah, they
so,
got. They got to pay the 3D designers to make new models and skins and sell them for $25
a
pop.
Yeah. But Wizards, at this other option, is also doing that and creating physical cards. So there's a lot more being paid out by Wizards. That's why they can't afford it. Now, it's not cool.
Right.
But that's what it is.
Right. And also, games like Fortnite and even Hearthstone are definitely more fun to watch, which is why this whole arena thing is going to be pushed pretty darn hard, you know? Like, you're not going to sit and watch, you know, if you're an average person who plays Magic casually, you know, are you going to sit and want to watch the current coverage do what they do for hours at a time? Probably not. But you can watch somebody play a fast-paced video game with stuff flashing, people getting shot down all the time, and people yelling and screaming. Like, there's such an element of character that Magic is missing out on. You know, they're not diving into these individual players. Again, on another podcast, they were saying, could you name off all the Platinum Pros right now? You could probably name a couple, but they're not taking these players and marketing them and making it really, really intriguing for you to kind of sink your teeth into actually learning about these people and what they've been doing and this, that, and
the
other.
I mean, a part of that is the fact that we've got an event every weekend.
Sure.
I mean, what's playing this weekend? Cincinnati?
Yeah, the Star City
Games
team. Yeah,
and then next weekend we've got GP Sacramento.
Right. Right. Now let me take this a step further, okay? If you wanted to really take these pro players and market them, what would you really have to do? And one of the things I thought of is, what do pro sports teams do? You know, obviously they live in the same city. Now, we're not at the point really where, you know, all the Platinum Pros could come live together in the same city and, let's say, produce content together on a daily basis. But
I mean, if you ask me, why aren't they doing or running sponsored events at local stores?
Yeah.
I mean, so way back when LSV was a big thing, all right?
Uh-huh.
My local gaming group, they've known LSV for a long time. In all honesty, matter of fact, they played when he started.
Sure.
And they were playing board games and all sorts of stuff.
Right.
And they asked LSV to come out for an event as a friend. And right. he was like, yeah, sure. I can do that for you. And when they talked about it, they got threefold what they were expecting out of the event just because they said LSV is going to be there. Now, I think that's how these should be marketed. They should be working on having their arena system that they have. I mean, it was there at Vegas. They had like 10 computers. What if they put that in a, I don't know, a trailer? And they would go to other storefronts on weekends or Friday nights and allow people to play on it. And they just take a tour around. Yeah. And you have a pro player from the local area comes down. It involves people coming down to the store. They get to play arena. They get to meet their pro players. You know, that seems really good. I could see something like that doing a lot better than, I don't know, Murder is Your F&M promo.
Well, and here's the counter to that. Unfortunately, seeing as these pros really don't make that much playing Magic, you know, a lot of them will have to have full-time jobs to sort of compensate for.
They have to
make the money. They have to travel because a lot of these pros have to grind GPs on a bi-monthly basis, or you know, every week, every couple of weeks, they're traveling around trying to get their points so they can maintain that Platinum Pro status. So if they were to, let's say make a cameo appearance in a local LGS before a, let's say they go to a Friday Night Magic the night before a GP in a city, that LGS would probably just explode with popularity for that night, you know?
Yes.
And then you bring into the fact that, you know, LGSs need more attention. I guarantee you that will get your LGS more business, more attention than putting a promo card in there. That could be worth 20 or 25 bucks or whatever Nexus of Fate is right now. But I guarantee you, not only will that drive business, but that will also drive, what is it called? Just the personality that we were talking about, you know? There's a lot
of... Well, it also starts driving loyalty.
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you'd get people, like, let's say for you go to Berkeley, you go to, let's say, Eudaimonia, okay? They're not sponsoring us, but we're dropping their name anyway. Let's say you go to Eudaimonia, and all of a sudden, Jerry Thompson, you know, I know he lives in Seattle, but, or near Seattle, whatever. Let's say Jerry Thompson shows up at Eudaimonia for an F&M.
A more equitable player, although not my favorite, would be Shahar Shenhar.
Sure, okay, great.
He's a local boy.
Okay, yeah, let's say he shows up and it was advertised that he would be at F&M at Eudaimonia the night before Grand Prix Oakland or Grand Prix San Jose or something like that. Holy cow. You would have to open up like more rooms to accommodate the people who would maybe get an attempt to play against him or even just meet him. Have him, you know, sign a card or two or something like that. Like that kind of exposure. And to do it publicly, you'd have to do some kind of streaming with it too. Like more
so
shops I've noticed.
I gotta throw this out there.
Yeah.
You remember Worlds?
I do. I do.
Do you remember when Worlds did exactly this?
Yeah. No. I don't remember when they did this. I don't think I was really an F&M goer at the time, but
no,
that was a thing.
So what was going on during Worlds is Worlds would happen, of course. There was they would do one a year. And yeah. You would get the top pro players prior to their pro event would be there. So, like, on a Friday, you could go down to the venue, play F&M, and they'll be there.
Yeah.
Spell slinging.
Yeah.
Playing Magic. Whatever you want to play, they'll play it.
Sure.
And, sure, they're playing all night. Sure, they're getting paid to be there. But it was a great way to meet and play these people. Anyhow, I think we're kind of...
No, we're not done with this yet.
This yet? You're still upset?
No, I'm still going, yeah, because this is actually got me thinking quite a bit here. I'm gonna run something by you here, okay? I've recently joined up on Facebook with a group. It's called MTG Content Creators.
Sure.
Now, if I'm just gonna bounce this out there and I want your immediate reaction to it, okay? Twitch is basically going to be the future of where Magic is headed, correct? In terms of popularity, right?
No.
Well, no? Okay.
No.
Okay, why not? It's going to be an e-sport. Why isn't Twitch or YouTube or something like that going to be where Magic is going to be focusing?
Well, the reason why I say no is because in the next 5 years, Twitch is going to be gone. YouTube is going to probably be in a different format, and we're going to be looking at a different format, possibly a system where there's more interaction between the players watching instead of them just having a chat screen.
Honestly, Twitch is going to be gone in 5 years?
I think it's going to be a completely different entity.
Okay.
And well, just like Vine let way to Snapchat.
Okay. Well, my whole point
now,
is...
Now, in the event of like video streaming services, not naming any of them out there, yeah, there's going to be something. Yes, the next step for Wizards is that they're going to have an all-encompassing option for people to enjoy and watch this. Personally, I could see the next step being a digitization of the playing field so people digital and in person can play Magic.
I think I see what you're saying.
That should be
here.
The next step.
I think I see what you're saying.
Because okay. imagine that you're going down to, oh, I don't know, you'll go down to GP Vegas. Sure, that costs you $600, maybe $2,000. Depends on what you're doing. But imagine that you at home with your kids there and the dogs and your wife, but you wanted to play in a side event or a main event. Imagine, if you would, that your pool can be put into a digital pool and you get put into the system. Imagine so that you could play somebody in that's actually there and have like a robot or a camera screen so you could see this person face to face and play them.
So you're saying essentially what we were doing previously on Twitch by Skyping and playing with paper cards is
going to be...
But
the difference would be is that... You can
they would
be
recognize the cards
and I
yeah.
can be digital.
No, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. And I mean, if you've ever watched Loading Ready Run stream again, I bring them up. They have the card recognize device or something. If you put the card in the middle of the table, it immediately brings it up so you can actually read the card, which is amazing for anybody who's watching. And it's easy to do. You don't have to sit there and type the card in every time it happens. You just get right. it recognized. And sure, in your example, I could see how you would play and there's some form of recognition software out there that allows you to be present with your cards at any moment with actual physical cards. Sure. Okay. But anyway, take a step back. Let me get to my actual point here.
Sure.
The fact that Hasbro and Wizards are concerned with selling product. Sealed product, not even singles. Okay,
sure. They don't care about the secondary market.
Could care less about the secondary market, and honestly, they could care less about the players on the Pro Tour. I think that the Pro Tour was an interesting device used by Wizards to advertise their product, because ultimately that's what it was. They don't want to pay out millions of dollars. They'd rather throw that back towards their profits so their company can grow. That's great. But my point is that this whole advertising and exposure of the pro players has to be community driven. So with this community of content creators, I think that it would be a fantastic adventure or experiment, if you will, to create a channel on Twitch or YouTube or any other live streaming network or whatever you have. And just compose it or make it up of all of the content that you get from various channels. Now, let me explain the pros and cons.
So
and people.
Before we just get it, you're imagining that there's essentially a channel guide system where you can pick and choose what type of things you get and look at?
No, not really. What I'm proposing is like TV, okay, before DVR. Okay, here's what TV was before DVR. There was a channel, ESPN, and all it did was sports. Okay, there's a channel, and all it does is Magic. It can be gameplay. It can be content that people make on YouTube. It can be interviews with pros. It could be Star Cities contributions. It could be video podcasts. There is so much content out there that if there was a central hub that people could come to watch, like a station, then that would be great. That would be a great start to kind of localize everything. Now, here's why people might not like that. Because maybe it detracts from viewership from their actual YouTube channel. And that's how people actually make money on YouTube with their content creation. But here's why it could work. If you don't backlog anything on Twitch, if it's all just present and at the time, and you end each video with check out rest of my stuff at blah, 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 at youtube.com or whatever, and someone wants to say, even just, hey, I want to show someone this video, where do I go to show it to them? They go to their YouTube page, and all of a sudden, bam, they're looking at all their stuff that they've made. And if they're like, okay, well, I've seen enough of this, let's jump back over to this channel and see what's good, and they see something else they like. More exposure for more pros, more content creators. And all it would take is just someone grabbing all the video files and slapping them together on a continuous loop, and you could play that channel 24/7.
So, in essence, you're just wanting to do what Daily MTG has been doing recently.
Like a Magic TV station. You're not going to get a Magic TV station on TV. There's just not enough interest. That's why I'm saying Twitch is the way to go for something like that.
Well, that's how 96 championships run on ESPN.
ESPN.
Too.
Yeah, sure. But that was, what, 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Sure.
What is it, 2018? Though that was 20... Jeez, almost 20 some odd years ago. Anyhow,
that's back when Magic thought it could spend money on real television time to make more money. And I don't think that worked. And that's why all this stuff has to be consumer driven. And it's not going to come down from Wizards. So,
but anyway. Wizards has already started this
with
Daily MTG. Have you been on Daily MTG in a while? You'll get a video from Loading Ready Run, Game Night, Commander Versus. Now, these are the most polished channels.
Sure. Sure.
So, it's a start. The problem is that Wizard deems whoever they feel is right. What? Like, Wizard deems GPs to be handled by Channel Fireball.
Right. Well, it's because they're a huge company and they, quote unquote, do a good job, you know.
I mean.
And if you look at the views for something like Game Nights, I mean, you'd be dumb not to want to incorporate that on a daily or weekly basis,
right?
You know.
So I mean, those the come thing out, is that there is a start.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, those come out.
The worry
once a month.
I've got, of course, is that, you know, there's the possibility of YouTube getting shut down because people are making their livelihood on there. And the people that are making their livelihood on there are, in essence, prostituting themselves. Even if they're not taking their clothes off.
Yeah, man, sure. But all I'm saying is
so
if you
it's
really
a gray
want to
area
drive,
that could be
if you want to drive the popularity of this game, if you want to drive the recognition of pro players, if you want to do anything other than advertise the current Magic standard and ancillary products, it all has to be consumer driven. You know, Magic's not, Wizards is not going to advertise stuff that was popular 5 years ago. They've got more stuff to worry about.
What are you
about.
Talking about? They're doing a Rochester Chaff for beta.
and we've come full circle back to our little talk here on the Silver Showcase. So anyway, whoa, that was quite a bit here. But
I don't
know
if that was little.
That was fun. That was good. Good little debate there. All right. Anyway, so let's move on here. Greg, we got a tiny swinging of the ban hammer a couple weeks ago here.
What format got banned?
What happened?
What format got that ban hammer?
Did Chain Whirler get banned?
No. Standard wasn't affected. What about
Stoneforge Mystic get unbanned?
Out of Modern? Nah, that card's still too good.
Did Prophet of Krufix get unbanned in EDH?
No, we didn't get Primetime either.
Did Mishra's Workshop get restricted in Vintage?
No.
Well,
you know, you're missing Legacy.
Oh.
And Brawl.
Yeah, I love Brawl. But anyway, we're talking about Legacy here. Greg, what got banned in Legacy?
Well, we've got the best one-drop Planeswalker ever produced, Deathrite Shaman.
Gideon's crying in the background.
Oh, yeah. So is Tybalt.
If
you don't know what Deathrite Shaman does, it is a black-green hybrid Elf Shaman 1/2 that you can tap and exile a land from a graveyard and a mana of any color. Tap a green and tap it, and exile a creature and gain 2 life, tap a black and tap and exile any other card and make an opponent lose 2 life. This card is probably the strongest card. It gives control outs. It allows the aggro decks to get mana quicker. It just does everything.
You mentioned it was a 1/2, right? So I did mention it was a 1/2. All those little young pyromancer tokens, any little 1/1 goblins, anything that could, you know, potentially aggro you out very early.
Uh-huh.
That spot removal is just, it's incidental graveyard hate. That really, it doesn't like push a deck like Dredge out of the format, but it really, really hampers it. Makes decks like Reanimator, where you pitch creature cards into the graveyard with hopes to bring them out. It will definitely, you know, sort of shell those strategies quite effectively. But now with it gone, I mean, oh, and another thing was you could just play it with a black. You didn't even have to be in green to be playing this card, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just, I mean, hence Grixis Delver decks playing Deathrite Shaman. but anyway, so Deathrite Shaman got the axe. It is no longer playable in Legacy. I think the only formats it's available in now are EDH and Vintage. So
Yeah.
That's
where EDH,
rough.
It's okay, and Vintage, it's not good enough.
Yeah. Yep. So, all right.
Which
well, Deathrite Shaman bit the dust. Also, Legacy is losing Gitaxian Probe. So, Phyrexian blue mana. So, either 1 blue or 2 life. So, essentially, you could play this for free. Look at target player's hand and draw a card.
Yeah.
So, it replaces itself and it gives you the information that you would need from your opponent to know what you are going to be doing in your next turn or two. And it gives you extra fodder in the graveyard to fuel delve spells or any cards where instants and sorceries or really anything in your graveyard becomes relevant.
You mean like Tarmogoyf?
Like Tarmogoyf, absolutely. I mean, it just did so much for nothing. I'd say virtually nothing, but yeah, 2 life is really nothing when it comes to Legacy. So, Gitaxian Probe bit the dust. So, 2 major cards, 2 big bannings. Legacy is definitely shook, so to speak, as the kids say these days. Greg, what do you think this means for the near future of Legacy? What are there any decks that people are going to be, you know, rushing to put back together now that they've got some, you know, some of the bullies escorted off of the schoolyard?
I mean, red decks can get played. Manaless Dredge can get played. There's a few decks that are a little bit better.
Your
now.
Favorite.
Yes. But then there's also decks like Infect that can't be played.
It makes it harder. Yeah, definitely.
Gosh. The problem is that without like Storm and this and a couple other decks required you to know what your opponent had. Now, you could put in other cards that allow you to look at your opponent's hand, like a Duress or Cranial Extraction even. But they're just not as good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, any of these, a lot of people were saying that Phyrexian mana is just a busted mechanic. And for the most part, you know, I feel like that's kind of right.
Slash Panther?
Sure.
That was getting played in Vintage because it killed Jaces.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, not to say that it's a really, you know, legitimate play, but something like, I mean, you know, Surgical Extraction, the one Phyrexian black mana target card in a graveyard that player exiles it as well as any number of copies of it from their hand and library. I mean, going Surgical Extraction on a key card and then Snapcaster Surgical Extraction on another key card, that's 8 cards just ripped out of that player's deck, you know, and with a 60 card deck, that's pretty crazy. That's nuts. Shriekhorn came out to play in one deck recently. I was hearing some people talk about that, and I remember when Mirrodin Besieged came out, and then we got new Phyrexia. You could turn one Shriekhorn, make him mill 3, and if they had a key card of their deck in there, you could just, like, lingering souls or whatever was going on during that time, you could surgical extraction that card away on the first turn, and their whole deck could just be done after that. So
yeah,
you could see how Phyrexian mana makes it really, really hard to keep these cards legitimate, given even though Legacy is the strongest format that many, I mean, obviously Vintage, but you know what I mean. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway.
So, what about that other thing that ended up happening and didn't actually happen?
Oh, yeah. So, when these banned and restricted announcements come around, there's always the speculation that a card will come off of the banned and restricted list. Specifically, this time around, there was a ton of hype around the thought of Stoneforge Mystic getting unbanned in Modern. And people lost their dang minds over this. There were people buying up copies of Stoneforge Mystic at an exorbitant price, left and right, hoping, not even, like just hoping that it was going to get unbanned. There was no proof that it was going to get unbanned. You know, there's no... Okay, Greg, why do you think they unbanned Jace the Mind Sculptor in Modern, honestly?
Well, mostly because of the fact that they understood that at this point now, the card wasn't as good as what it was then. There's more removal, there's more answers, there's more aggro. Just sure. All in all, there's more things that can deal with a Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Sure.
But right now, being able to search up a... equipment and cheated into play.
Yeah,
that's just too good.
I mean, it is good, but don't you think that a lot of why they unbanned Jace the Mind Sculptor, especially when they unbanned it, was because they were bringing it out in a master set and they wanted to hype it up and sell more product?
I mean, yeah, probably. But they also knew that it wasn't going to have any real effect on the format, so why keep it banned?
Well, again, that brings me back to my point of them wanting to sell more product, which is why I think that while Stoneforge Mystic, like, I'm going to actually go ahead and say that I think Stoneforge Mystic is playable now, considering that we do have decks like Hollow One and... I mean, Storm can go off on turn two sometimes, but if all you're doing is on turn two playing your Stoneforge, because you'd have to wait to turn three to vial in a Stoneforge if you wanted to do that. But, you know, Stoneforge is not going to win you the game on turn three, four, maybe five will get it done. But I think that it should be reconsidered. And I think that it does have a good chance of being taken off the ban list, but Wizard doesn't have the correct product ready to go such that if they did unban Stoneforge Mystic, everybody would be clamoring to buy up their product. What happened with Jace was amazing. You know, people were buying M25 even though they were saying it was a low-valued set. Now, if you say Stoneforge Mystic is going to be in this next Master set, oh, and by the way, we're going to unban it, have fun. Everyone's going to be running out buying that new product.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just think that it will come off the ban list. I'm like 99% sure, but only when you hear that it's going to be getting a reprint, or maybe vice versa. You'll hear it come off the ban list and then surprise, Stoneforge Mystic is back in return to battle for Zendikar. But I don't know. We'll see.
The return.
I don't know when it's going to stop, man. I mean, Ravnica is so popular. What's it going to be when we come back, you know, the next time? Dude, by the way, do you have any other ideas of what that third set is going to be? Because obviously they haven't given us the name of it yet.
It's totally going to be the Desolation of Smog.
It's going to be... I think the fact that they've kept the name from us means severe plot twist. You know, huge world-changing event. Bolas brings his Eternals to Ravnica, and it's now Ravnica Prison of the Guild Pact or something like that. I don't know. But
no, it's going to be Alcatraz.
See, that's the story I'm waiting for, okay? you know, Nicol Bolas and Ugin dropping his eggs, and well, we won't get all into that, but that is the story that I'm like chomping at the bit for. You know, we'll bring you the Chronicles of Bolas and Ugin, but oh man, oh, this other story has just got me on the edge of my seat. So
I know.
Okay, so we have gone on with As Foretold for quite some time now. We wanted to transition because, gosh darn it, Greg, M19, it's release weekend. You can get your hands on all these cards, and we haven't even gotten a chance to really talk about a lot of them yet. So we'll blast through a few of them. And then we have something special because our mailbag has been collecting some dust. We have some mail that we have not gotten to for quite some time, and we wanted to kind of turn it into a fun little exercise that we might pursue later on in future episodes. But before too long, let's jump ship and head on into the Brewmaster's Lair. All right.
Pour us another drink.
So, Greg, M freaking 19.
The return to Corset.
Return to Corset. All right. So, I'm going to go ahead and just say let's pick three cards that we're super excited about and talk about them.
And go first.
What's that?
You go first. Go on ahead.
All right. All right. I'm going to knock out the first one here. And I believe we might have talked about one or two cards, but you know what? I'm super excited to talk about this card because this is like my spirit animal right here. Tezzeret, Artifice Master.
What?
For three blue, you get a legendary planeswalker Tezzeret with 5 loyalties. +1, create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying. Heads up, we have a lot of Thopter creators in this set, in this standard format. This standard format's huge right now.
Yeah, it is.
Like, this is insane.
Until October, but, yeah.
Yeah, you've got, like, you know, Whirler Virtuoso. Obviously, you've got PNLR. Thopter Tribal is real. Then he has a 0 ability. Draw a card. If you control 3 or more artifacts, draw 2 cards instead. That's a 0 cost draw 2 in the right deck. And, of course, at 5 mana, you'll probably have some cards that you played before, possibly to improvise, you know. But anyway, that's very, very powerful, and that's exciting. And then -9, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of your end step, search your library for a permanent card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. I am such a fan of this ultimate because ultimates that essentially say you win the game. Okay, great. You pop the ultimate. You're going to win. Great. This is so much suspense. You know, even if Tezzeret dies every turn, you get to go through your library, find a permanent, and put it on the battlefield.
Whoa,
you know, that's...
whoa. What if they play even Mind Sensor?
Well, then you're hosed.
You only get to look at the top 4.
Then, my friend, you are hosed. You'll probably be able to find a permanent card in the top 4 of your library because you're probably playing the right kind of deck. But still, yeah, that's a definite hoser. And you pulled that out on me during our little God Pharaoh's Gift games that we were playing before. And that was pretty backbreaking, I'll tell you what. So don't sleep on that Aven Mind Sensor. But we're not talking about Amonkhet. We're talking about M19. So Tezzeret, Artifice Master, definitely on my wish list. Greg, what's your first of 3 cards you want to talk about?
First of 3 cards. It's going to be Scapeshift.
Oh. And you have a little personal attachment to this, don't you?
I really do. I just finished, I'm almost finished with making a modern Scapeshift for Titan. Titan Shift specifically. And, jeez, I spent way too much money on getting these Scapeshifts. Now they're like $13. But this card is really strong. Now, this is 2 generic green sorcery. Spell, of course. Sacrifice any number of lands. And then search your library for that many lands. Put them on the battlefield tapped. Sweet,
yep.
Right? This card's really
super
good.
Sweet.
So, the other night I was drafting M19. I decided to first pick this card. And
what? In a draft? What?
Everybody said that same exact thing. But when you really think about it, Scapeshift is a bomb. I mean, did anybody run Mana Severance?
don't even know what Mass Severance is.
What was the there was another card that was like Zendikar block that ate cards out of your deck. So what's really good about this, our Mirror Incubator did the same thing, is that this card is bomby because you're able to sacrifice a bunch of your lands, get the last of your lands out of your deck. So you yes. have no more lands in your deck, and you have nothing but gas. I feel that there could be a good deck with this in Standard. I mean, could you imagine doing this on, like, turn 5 and getting rid of... You're now out, what, 12 lands out of your deck, maybe? Heck, at least 8 or 10 lands left in 50 cards or 40 cards. It's like you're not going to see much of them. You'll be able to see your consistent cards. This card enables consistency instead of hindering you.
I mean, this isn't going to be my next card, but if you paired this up with something like Vivian's Invocation, which lets you look at the top 7 cards of your library and put a creature mm-hmm. from among them on the battlefield, that, you're right, Scapeshift would make this card so much stronger.
Well, I mean, you also have Crucible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
So there's a lot of play right now. I think this is just stronger.
I think that Scapeshift will work its way into Standard one way or another. There's
Do you know what else tools. Plays really nicely with Scapeshift right now?
What does?
The Deserts deck.
Deserts, yes.
Because there are so many cards that care about Deserts, either in the graveyard or in play. This card enables those. Now, they may not be as good as your Scarab God, but they do stuff.
They do. All right, well, moving right along here, my next card. I actually used to open a lot of these back in Conflux, and I loved them then, and I love them even more now. Banefire is going to be X and a red for a sorcery that says Banefire deals X damage to any target. If X is 5 or more, this spell can't be countered, and the damage can't be prevented. So I'm going to start off with the only foil to this that I know, and that is a card like Commit, which won't counter it, but it will put it third from the top. So
second.
There is one corner case, maybe another. I'm not 100% sure right now, but Venter? There are corner case ways to deal with Banefire. Now that we got that out of the way, let me tell you why I am nuts about this card.
Is it this double card cast?
This card makes Jaya Ballard really good. This card is really good against Hazoret. This card is really good against any other thing that might say, you know, indestructible. And not to mention the fact that you could just take someone out completely. You could put 4 of these in your deck, you know, Banefire you for 7, Banefire you for 7. That's 14 damage, you know. And down the road, you've got Chandra too. And you've got... Where is it? There's that red creature, Catalyst Elemental.
Oh, yeah.
That you can sacrifice to add red. There's so much big red mana production that's in Standard right now that these Banefires can be super fat and super juicy and uncounterable. So that white-blue control deck that you have, sorry, but you're not going to stop a 20-point Banefire.
It's true.
You know, it's so good. I love this card, and I think that it's going to definitely see a lot of run in Standard, not just in mono red decks, you know, because it's only 1 red mana plus X. You know, you're talking about Scapeshift in green. You could have a red green deck where you ramp out with Hour of Promise and then just Banefire someone's face, you know, take them down. You could play Banefire in the same deck as Gigantosaurus if you really wanted. But anyway, yeah, I'm super excited about Banefire. I think that it is going to make a big name for itself, and I cannot wait to brew around it, possibly even make a Brawl deck that includes me a Banefire. All right, Greg, do you have a third card you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah, I did talk about 2. No, I only talked about 1.
Oh, you're right. You just talked about Scapeshift. What is your second card?
I'm gonna have to go with Death Baron.
Oh.
This is such a great reprint. I mean, if you didn't know, up until we got this spoiled, Death Barons were somewhere around $20 non-foil.
Yep.
expensive for what it is. I mean, it's just a zombie lord. Well, a zombie skeleton lord. But this card does so much. I mean, it's a 3-drop 2/2. So it is a skeleton zombie, if I remember correctly. It might just be a zombie wizard.
And it gives it's a zombie wizard, yeah. Yeah,
all other zombies and skeletons +1/+1, and death touch. That you control, of course. This card is just strong. And imagine this in like a Scarab God deck as a one of. Oh, I'll get back my Gear Hulk. Oh, look, it's a 5/5 death touch.
Dude, and I have to credit Patrick Chapin on this. I was just listening to Top Level Podcast before we recorded. He mentioned that in a Scarab God world, in a God Pharaoh's Gift world, you have Walking Ballista. I'm going to let that marinate for just a second.
Yeah, yeah. No, you could Walking Ballista reanimate and then have this out and just, you know, machine gun an entire field.
I'll tap 4, I'll kill your cry. I'll tap 4, I'll kill your guy. Exactly. What's that card that you had? Arcane Adaptation? I mean, we're bringing blue into it now, but if you're running the Scarab God, I mean, why not? But
sure.
Dude, I'm going to just say something here, and you can make fun of... You can make fun of me for the colors in a second here, but Death Baron, Arcane Adaptation, naming zombies, Goblin Chain Whirler.
Oh, God.
Yeah, just mow everything down.
God, to get there would be impossible.
Yeah, right. 1 blue, 2 black, and 3 red. Make that mana work, people. I want to see it. Dude, I love me a Death Baron. The card's so good.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. So yeah. I'm happy to have that back. It's kind of a – I already have mine, but I'm happy it's there. Yep. So what's your number 3?
Okay. My number 3 is an uncommon artifact that can go in every deck.
Meteor Golem?
Arcane Encyclopedia. It's 3 mana. It's an artifact. And it just says tap 3, tap it, draw a card.
Yep.
So incredibly universally effective. I mean, this card is just flying under the radar right now. But if you, I guarantee you, if you get yourself a foil one of these, someday this card is going to be worth some good money. Because every format, I mean, standard, it's a little clunky. But I'm more thinking like, in, you know, EDH or say, just draw a card. It's super simple. You know, any deck can run it. Just tap 3, tap it, draw a card. End of your opponent's turn, just draw a card. You know, you get anything that untaps stuff, draw another card. It's so good. At 3 mana to tap to draw a card, that's one of the cheapest amounts of mana that you'd have to pay for this effect out of an artifact. I mean, obviously, with shenanigans like Skull Clamp, you doing other stuff. But this is just a card that is good that you can put into anything and almost make any deck better. I mean, probably not in the competitive circuit or whatever, but it's just a really, really, really good card.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. Obviously, I love artifacts. You heard me on my Tezzeret rant. But I think Arcane Encyclopedia, especially in Limited, is going to be a really, really good card to have. Probably multiples of, if you like to run multiple decks, which a lot of us do. So
No, we don't.
No, not at all. All right, Greg, what is your third and final card?
I'm going to go with One with the Machine.
I am so happy you picked that. I love that card. Okay, tell us about One with the Machine.
So One with the Machine is a sorcery, 3 generic, and a blue. And it says you draw cards equal to the highest converted mana costs among artifacts you control. Now, in standard limited, the average cost of an artifact is 3. Because okay. Everybody plays Mana Lith.
Sure.
So you run this in your deck. Arcane Encyclopedia. If they get it, sure. But yeah. If you get it, this is pay 4, draw 3.
Yeah.
It's pretty good, right?
Oh, yeah.
But let's say you get a Meteor Golem. Or let's say you get just so many other cards. I mean, even a Heart of Kirin's good with this as a 2-drop.
Yeah. What about a Metalwork Colossus?
It's done.
What about a planar bridge? What about a
well, planar bridge isn't good enough for standard, but there's so many cards. Even Mycosynth Golem in EDH.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so many good cards. This card just seems strong. It's simple, it's easy, and it should be able to be played in almost anywhere.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay, so we're just going to cut it off there. Obviously, there's multiple tons of cards that we would love to talk about, but in the interest of time and the fact that we really, really, really wanted to get to this email question here, we're gonna round out the episode with that. One of our listeners chimed in saying that he was very interested in building a commander deck. But he wanted it to have, he's running Glissa the Traitor as one of his commanders. So artifacts are definitely part of a focus. But also he asked us just for, he likes humans as well. So what I proposed we do, to kind of give him some insight here, and we did a little bit of research, went on the Gatherer, looked up some cards, some green and or black cards that are humans. And Greg, I'm going to bounce some cards off of you, and I want you to tell me whether or not you feel like these cards could be played in a commander deck. And you can use build around me scenarios or just overall value good scenarios, but we're just going to try to blast through these as much as we can here, because there's a lot of really good green and black humans here. So,
are
you ready, Greg? Humans.
I'm ready.
Okay, so first is a card from all the way back in Exodus. This card is called Avenging Druid. Let me read it to you real quick. For two and a green, you get a 1/3 human druid. If Avenging Druid deals damage to an opponent, you may reveal cards from your library until you reveal a land card. Put that land into play and put all of the revealed cards into your graveyard.
I'm going to have to say this is good.
I'm going to agree.
Using this card in conjunction with anything that is a unblockable effect, which is something you tend to want to do with your other cards in a Glissa deck, allows you to get stuff into your graveyard, and then you get additional triggers. Like, you get to kill stuff, you get back other artifacts. This just seems value.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that this card has a lot of homes in a lot of different decks. There's a lot of graveyard specific decks. I mean, Muldrotha, one of the most recent ones, really doesn't care about your graveyard. And it's green, so you can go in any deck that uses green, and it's one damage. So I don't think opponents are really going to be that concerned with taking a damage.
But they're going to look to block it because they want to get it out of there.
Right, and they don't want you ramping your mana. But still, that's for 3 mana, a 1/3 that will ramp you. And that land comes in untapped, by the way. That's pretty sweet.
Not bad.
So, yeah, Avenging Druid, pretty awesome. And yes, these will be in alphabetical order, if any of you notice. Number two, from Theros, we have Agent of the Fates. 1 black for a 3/2. Human Assassin with Death Touch. Yep. And it has Heroic. Whenever you cast a spell that targets Agent of the Fates, each opponent sacrifices a creature. So, yay or nay?
I'm going to have to say nay.
Okay.
In a black-green deck where you're focusing on getting Glissa triggers, you're not going to be targeting your creatures. Heroic doesn't do you enough.
Okay.
Now, if you're playing this in, like, let's say, a red-white-black Heroic deck, yeah, I'd play it. Having all those spells that target this is a strong card if you have targeting effects for your own stuff. But in a deck like this, your targeting effects are destroying a creature.
Right. Right. No, that's fair. If this were to trigger off of, like, equipping, that would be different.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, if it just became target of any spell or effect, then that would be good. But, yeah, it was kind of rough. I tried to make this guy work in standard in a white-black standard deck. White-black standard deck. And it was just super mediocre to bad. So,
yeah.
It's okay. All right, next one. Bog Initiate from Invasion. 1 and a black for a 1/1 human wizard. Tap 1 generic, add black to your mana pool. So essentially, this is just mana fixing. Do you think that this card would be good enough to play in an EDH deck?
Not really. I mean,
no?
You get to play with Signets.
Yeah. That's true. My only thought for this would be, like, if you were playing, like, a green-black or a multicolored deck, like a Grixis deck, and you had a card like Drain Life that'll only allow you to spend black mana on or something. But again, very corner case. So, all right. So cards like that.
You're also probably just going to play Urborg, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. Okay. Common from Invasion. No. Cabal Paladin from Dominaria.
Yes.
3 and a black for a 4/2. Whenever you cast a historic spell, Cabal Paladin deals 2 damage to each opponent.
Yeah, no, totally. You'd run this. It seems good. You know why?
Why?
Because Glissa, the traitor, gets you back artifacts. What are artifacts?
Historic spells. There Boom. You go.
Yeah, so this is good recursion. If you're on a dime, this card plays well for you.
Very good budget solution. Also, you run something like Scrap Trawler to recur some of those artifacts. This thing can do a ton of damage pretty quickly. Awesome. Okay, so Cabal Paladin, yay. Champion of Lamholt, 1 green-green for a 1/1 human warrior. Okay. Creatures with creatures with power less than Champion of Lamholt's power can't block creatures you control. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a 1/1 counter on Champion of Lamholt. It's really good. It's in a commander deck, for crying out loud, so you know it's good.
So one of the cards that shines really strongly for me in this Glissa deck, now this is a little pricey, it's actually 2 cards. You have Patriarch's Bidding, which is 3 generic black-black, and it says you get to take each player names a creature type, and all creatures of the named type return from the graveyard to the battlefield.
Right.
You choose humans with this, and if, let's say, you get back 10 dudes, your Champion of Lamholt is going to get +9/+9, making it so that only creatures with 10 power can block.
Yep. That's huge.
And you just win.
Yeah, not everybody has a Metalwork Colossus to block with.
No, no.
No. All right, next one. From Ixalan, we have Deadeye Tracker. For 1 black, you get a 1/1 human pirate that has 1 and a black tap. Exile 2 target cards from an opponent's graveyard. Deadeye Tracker explores, which, of course, you reveal the top card of your library, put that card in your hand. If it's a land, otherwise, put a 1/1 counter on this creature, then put the card into your grave, put it back or put it in your graveyard. Yay or nay, Deadeye Tracker?
It's fringe playable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like it because it allows you to exile cards, but I'd rather be running Scavenging Ooze.
Yep. No, good point. But Scavenging Ooze isn't a human, though.
True. So this is a conditional Scavenging Ooze.
Yeah.
That doesn't give you life.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Next card. Next card. Den Protector. 1 and a green for a 2/1. Creatures with power less than Den Protector's power can't block it. It has Megamorph. So you can play this card face down for 3 generic. Turn it face up for its Megamorph cost. Put a 1/1 counter on it. When it's turned face up, return target card from your graveyard to your hand.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, this is an easy choice. This is a great card to run.
Okay.
I've run also, this in even like non-tribals because it does that, and getting the 1/1 counter is really powerful.
Right. Also, a budget alternative for Eternal Witness. I believe Den Protector is still pretty budget.
Yeah, it's like $1 or so, whereas Ewits are like 4.
Yeah. No, that's true. Okay, and Eternal Witness was actually later on, but obviously you're going to play Eternal Witness. So it's the same basic card, except less work. All right, next one. Disciple of Bolas.
Mm-hmm.
3 and a black for a 2/1 human wizard. When a Disciple Bolas enters the battlefield, sacrifice another creature. You gain X life and draw X cards, where X is that creature's power. Yay or nay?
Yay.
Okay.
Not only does it give you a death trigger for Glissa, it gives you card draw and life gain.
There you go. There you go. All right, next up. Doomed Necromancer. 2 and a black for a 2/2 human visionary. Tap a black, tap it, sacrifice Doomed Necromancer, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield.
It's a pretty simple choice. This gives you extra triggers on any of your bigger dudes. I mean, if you run Grey Merchant as a one of, even though it's not a human, this allows you to get it back into play.
Yep.
It's good. I'd run it.
All right. Okay, next one. We have Dream Stealer from Hour of Devastation. 2 and a black for a 1/2 with Menace. It's pretty key. Whenever Dream Stealer deals combat damage to a player, that player discards that many cards, and you can eternalize it for 4 black-black, bringing it back from the graveyard as a 4/4 black zombie with Menace still. So, yay on Dream Stealer.
I'm a so-so on this. I'd prefer to do other effects to make people discard, but it's not bad.
Right. I think in a different deck, this might be better when we're focusing more on discarding cards or something like that. Because, I mean, if you hit with this and you have a Waste Knot in play, that's just gas.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So moving on. Duskwatch Moving Recruiter. One and a green for a 2/2 human werewolf warrior. Tap two and a green. Look at the top three cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card from among them and put it in your hand. Put the rest of the bottom of your library in any order. That's all we're going to be concerned with. It flips into a different werewolf, but never mind. Is that playable?
Like, it's good. I see a lot of people that do run it in their EDH deck, but there are other cards that are better for budget playable. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Cool. You know what? Involved in this list, I'm going to go ahead and forego ones that are already included in Commander decks, just because obviously they're good in Commander if they're put in that product. So I'm going to skip ahead here in the interest of time as well. We have Gigantomancer from Rise of Eldrazi was the original printing.
This card was really interesting as, like, if I remember correctly, it's a 7 generic and a green.
Yep.
For a 1/1 that you could pay one generic and make a creature a 7/7 until end of turn.
Correct. It's a human shaman. Yes. So, Gigantomancer, yay or nay?
The card's good, but there's a really big but to this because it's so expensive for what it's doing. You almost have to cheat it into play to make it valuable. And it makes for awkward gameplay.
Well, and the fact that you don't have to tap it means you could use it the turn it comes into play. But you're right. You would have to cheat it out if you want any extra mana to make other creatures 7 cents.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Okay.
Like, I enjoy it, but I just don't think it's enough.
Okay. Fair. Fair. All right. Next one. From Khans of Tarkir, we have Grim Haruspex. 2 and a black for a 3/2. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, draw a card, and it has morph.
Eh?
Yay or nay?
Eh? I mean, you're not playing Marin.
That's true. That's true.
If you were on Marin, I'd say yes.
Okay.
But otherwise, it doesn't do much for you.
Okay, moving on. We have Hapatra, Vizier of Poisons. For black and a green, you get a 2/2 human cleric. Whenever Hapatra, Vizier of Poisons deals combat damage to a player, you may put a -1/-1 counter on target creature. Whenever you put a one or more -1/-1 counters on a creature, create a 1/1 green snake creature token with death touch.
It's cute, but this is a build around card, not a 99.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I can see that. Okay. Next up, we have Jor-El, Empress of Beasts. For 3 green-green, you have a 3/3 legendary human spell shaper. For 2 and a green, you tap it, discard 2 cards. Until end of turn, all lands target player controls are 3/3 creatures that are still lands. Yay or nay on Jor-El?
You know, this has always been fringe playable. It might be playable in this deck because you get to ditch cards from your hand to your graveyard to get Glissa, get them back with Glissa, so you're not really losing them. And you could go into a Toxic Deluge or any number of things to eat all of your opponent's lands. This can really blow out a game.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a card that's not going to make you many friends if you're using it in that way.
Yes.
If you're using it on your own lands and then just overrunning, you know, well, that's a different story. But the potential to be someone's worst enemy here is pretty great.
Yeah.
All right. This next one obviously gets no commander play at all. It's a terrible commander. Nobody would ever run it. Kamal, Fist of Krosa. For 4 green-green, you get a 4/3 human druid. Tap a green. Target land becomes a 1/1 creature until end of turn. It's still a land. 2 green-green-green. Creatures you control get +3/+3 and gain trample till end of turn.
And
definite
this
no, right?
is the card that people play over Jor-El. Because not only does it allow you to extend really far by animating your own lands or your opponent's lands in response to them doing something silly, it allows you to overrun.
Right. Obviously, my sarcasm.
If you're
going to
play a green deck,
this
is almost an auto include, just like Jezzal Goldmane is in any type of creature based white deck.
Right. Right. Just an overrun. And then also the targeted land hate, too. Kind of like Jor-El, but you can do it, pick them off like one land at a time because it's not target land you control, it's just target land. So you're like, yeah, that Dark Depths you're working on over there, it's now a 1/1 creature. I'll poke it, it's dead. Moving on.
I think one of the cards I used to run with Kamal, because I have a Kamal EDH deck, and when I was a Rude player, I ran Masticore.
Okay.
So I get to go 1 green, your land's a dude, I pay 2 colorless, your land is dead.
Nice. Nice.
Oh, I can tap for 50.
All right, next card.
I heard you like lands.
Next card, Kessig Cage Breakers, 4 and a green for a 3/4 human rogue, originally from Dark Ascension, sorry. Whenever Kessig Cage Breakers attacks, create a 2/2 green wolf creature token that's tapped and attacking for each creature card in your graveyard.
So I'm going to say this was actually printed in a commander deck.
Oh, it was. Dang it.
But
right, you're right.
The card is good in this deck, not this deck. Okay. Because unless you're really going to have a lot of your creatures dead, like you would in a Marin deck, this doesn't do you much.
Mm-hmm. True. Okay, so next card, we have King Makar the Gold Cursed. 2BB for a 2/3 human. With Inspired, whenever King Makar becomes untapped, you may exile target creature. If you do, put a colorless artifact token named Gold onto the battlefield. It has sacrificed this artifact. Add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. Yay or nay?
I think that's a pretty good card.
I think it is, too. I think you need a way to tap it to abuse it.
Yeah.
Like vehicles, maybe.
God. There's definitely a way to do it. I think it's playable, but there are other things that do better.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, so moving along. Next one. We have Lifesmith. 1 and a green for a 2/1 human artificer from Scars of Mirrodin. It says, whenever you cast an artifact spell, you may pay 1. If you do, you gain 3 life.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I mean, it's okay. You know, it's going to keep you alive. It's an early game play that will allow you to kind of survive longer. And you're going to be dealing with artifacts, but the 3 life for 1 mana is, I don't know. It's okay. Glissa brings artifacts back from the graveyard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe this would have a spot in that deck. I don't know. All right. Moving right along. Another human here. Liliana, Heretical Healer. 1BB for a 2/3 legendary creature, human cleric with lifelink. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, exile Liliana, Heretical Healer, then return it to the battlefield transformed under your owner's control. If you do, create a 2/2 zombie creature token. We won't go into the planeswalker side, which is what it transforms into. Spoiler alert. But, Greg, your thoughts on Liliana, Heretical Healer?
Honestly, I would run it, but mostly because of the fact that it does turn into a planeswalker. That's just so much better.
Yeah, 2/3 lifelink for 3 is kind of meh. But yeah, the planeswalker and the zombie are just really, really gas. Okay, here we go. Limduel, the Necromancer. 5BB for a 4/4 human wizard. Whenever a creature an opponent controls is put into a graveyard from play, you may pay 1BB. If you do, return that card to play under your control. If it's a creature, it's a zombie in addition to its other types. Tap 1BB, regenerate target zombie. Yay or nay on Limduel.
It's a good card. It's more conditional than you want it to be.
Okay. Sure.
I could play it if you needed to get that extra distance. Otherwise, you're dealing with humans. You're not going to have a lot of strong cards. But it does allow you to keep your strong cards.
Okay. All right. And again, in the interest of time, I'm going to shift gears and go to some more older cards that people might not be too familiar with because we are going on kind of here. So next one I'm going to say is it's actually from Odyssey. This is Nut Collector. For 5 and green, you get a 1/1 human druid. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may put a 1/1 green squirrel creature token into play. And you have if you have threshold, all squirrels get +2/+2.
What is threshold again?
Threshold is you have threshold as long as 7 or more cards are in your graveyard.
That's right, guys. So I think you're not going to have threshold as much as you want in this deck. But this card does give you creatures that die.
Yep. Yeah.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, Glissa's and anything on the board dies. Let me double check that.
Okay. All right.
I wouldn't say that this card is bad. Oh, no. It doesn't give you the triggers if your creature dies. It's only opponents. So you could get a lot of game blocks on this, but I'd rather be running Deranged Hermit.
Okay.
And sure, that's an fair elf, but it gives you squirrels.
Yeah, okay. Next up, we have Pitiless Plunderer. from Rivals of Ixalan, 3 and a black for a 1/4 human pirate. Whenever another creature you control dies, create a colorless treasure artifact token with tap, sacrifice this artifact, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It says any creature dies on you control or any creature dies.
Whenever another creature you control dies.
Yeah, this doesn't do much for you.
Not that good. No. Okay. All right. Here comes an old one all the way back from Antiquities. Priest of Yawgmoth. 1 and a black for a 1/2 human cleric. You may... Okay, here's the wording on the card. Tap to add an amount of black mana equal to target artifact's casting cost to your mana pool. This effect is played as an interrupt. Target artifact, which must belong to you, is discarded. This artifact cannot be one that is already on its way to the graveyard. And artifact creatures killed this way may not be regenerated. Oh, by the way, this could get opened in the Silver Showcase. So just wanted to let you all know. Anyway, Oracle text will probably sound something more like, tap, sacrifice an artifact, add amount of mana equal to its mana cost of black mana, I'm sorry, to your mana pool. In Glissa, yay or nay?
I mean, you got to be running artifacts, which you're going to do. I'd say it's good. I'd run it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you sacrifice a 3-drop, add 3 black mana to your mana pool, play something. You could probably bring your artifact back with a kill spell or something. It seems something could loop there. Yeah. Next one. Royal Assassin. 1 black-black for a 1/1 human assassin. Tap. Destroy target tapped creature.
No, that seems bad. You can't run it. Yes, I'd totally run this card. It's great.
Right? I mean, it just couples with Glissa very nicely. So, okay. Royal Assassin, definitely good. That was in Commander. That one's in Commander. Silent Assassin from Mercadian Masks. Black-black. For a 2/1 human mercenary, tap 3 and a black, destroy target blocking creature at end of combat. You don't have to tap her, and it doesn't say you have to do it only once.
I mean, it's not bad. It allows you to destroy their creatures. It allows you to get your triggers off. I'd probably play this, yeah.
Yeah, it is pretty mana intensive. So, okay, and then here,
who
similar
cares
to
about
that,
mana intensive in EDH?
Yeah, right. Exactly. This card's very similar to the Priest of Yawgmoth that we had earlier, but Soldevi Adnate from Alliances. 1 and a black for a 1/2 human cleric. Tap, sacrifice a black or artifact creature to add an amount of black mana equal to that creature's casting cost to your mana pool.
Like it's good, but it doesn't do what you really want to be doing with the deck.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true.
So, I'd probably say no.
Meh.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Thorn of the Black Rose from Conspiracy 2. 3 and a black for a 1/3 human assassin with death touch. When Thorn of the Black Rose enters the battlefield, you become the monarch.
I mean, if you need that extra card draw and you're an attacking deck, sure.
Yeah.
But humans being so small, unless you're getting in with unblockables, I'd probably not be running this.
Yeah. Yeah. True. All right, and I'm going to skip over Tireless Tracker because it's not really that budget, and it's a human, it's good, but if you want to know what Tireless Tracker does, go ahead and check it out.
They're only like $13.
Yeah, right, only. We have Whisper, Blood Liturgist from Dominaria, 3 and a black for a 2/2.
This card's just good.
Yeah, human cleric, tap, sack 2 creatures, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. And finally, Zoologist. Or zoologist. There you go. For 3 and a green, you get a 1/2 human druid. Tap 3 and a green. Tap it. Reveal the top card of your library. If it's a creature card, put it into play. Otherwise, put it into your graveyard.
I mean, it's okay. It plays into your theme pretty well, because if you're not getting a creature, you're getting an artifact probably, and putting an artifact in your graveyard isn't bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it seems fine.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Well, we've reached the end of my list. Thank you for indulging me here. That was kind of fun. But that's going to kind of do it for us. We're going to wrap things up here. It's been a while, a bit of a long episode, but you know what? We've missed talking to you guys. So thank you for hanging out. And thank you so much, everybody, for the kind words. There's been a lot of talk on Twitter some activity on our Instagram page and our YouTube page. You guys are awesome, and we really appreciate it. We love you guys. We love magic, so we're going to keep doing this as often as we can. So with that, we'll remind you that this show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming. Head to flipsidegaming.com, where any order you make over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps, save yourself 10% off your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. Greg, where are you at? Where can they find you?
I am on Twitter at NoobSlasher2003.
And I am on Twitter at MTG_Sean. The show is at The Win Condition. You can email us, thewincondition@gmail.com. Instagram, thewincondition_MTG. Check out our YouTube page. Check out our backlog of Twitch videos. Other than that, you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play,
YouTube. Well, I mean, they probably found us there.
Yeah, but we're always trying to expand.
Whatever we're not on, let us know.
Yeah, right? We want to know. We want to know right now. No. All right, well, all that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And we will talk to y'all next week, hopefully.
Yeah, have a great evening, guys.